Welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Comic Review Podcast, episode 53.
With energy! Hey, welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Comic Review Podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we are the Fanboys Who Strike Back. We are back from a small hiatus. We've been busy. We've been reading lots of things. It's been out there. Been watching a lot of things, and we're back to talk about some comics this week. We like to talk about a lot of the stuff that happens in the comics, so we're not going to hold anything back. We're going to spoil some stuff for you. So be forewarned. What we got this week, we got some selections from the past week and possibly some stuff from the weeks past that we missed. Also, we are going to be discussing the recent announcement of the cancellation of the Bat Family books.
Yep.
And also talking about the first volume of Walking Dead. So, buckle your seatbelts, kids.
All right. And with that, I had some issues at my store. I couldn't find a lot of the books that you wanted me to read, so I had to go to the week before, and I picked out Terra number one by Jimmy Palmiotti and I think Justin Grant.
Yeah.
Art by Amanda Connor. By the way, what else has she done? Because her art is really familiar.
She did the Green Arrow Black Canary wedding special off the top of my head.
She did something else, too. I don't know what
it is. Yeah, she's been around for a while. Titans? No, she didn't. I don't think she did Titans.
Her art looks a lot like, jeez, I'm blanking now, but Ultimate Spider-Man, replacement for Mark Bagley. What's his name? This is going to bother me.
It's on the tip of your tongue.
Hold on a second. Just give me a second.
Amanda Connor has done Birds of Prey, X-Men Unlimited. She did a Power Girl. She did do JSA. She did a run on JSA Classified, the first run, which was a origin story for Power Girl, where they first started kind of bringing her character back into the mix. She's done an Electra miniseries. She's kind of been all over the place. Her art, while a little cheesecakey and sexy, I'm actually okay with. Like,
yeah,
much more than
good.
Some of the other artists out there.
Stuart Immonen. Jeez. Immonen,
yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah, their art looks very, very similar. Okay, so back to the book. Sorry about the little sidetrack there. I know of the previous Terras. I have no history with them, but I've known something about them going crazy. The Judas contract or something has something to do with one of them, some kind of relation to Deathstroke, but that's all I know. So this was, it was kind of interesting. Apparently this new Terra, she's kind of going around the globe, stopping all these national disasters, all these civilizations that have some kind of connection to the earth, to living underground, to living in lava, are getting very upset about us earth dwellers getting in their business. And so Terra is kind of jumping across the globe and stopping all these things. And they make an emphasis to show that she's doing a lot of stuff. Like in like a 24-hour period, they said that she's been at, you know, all around the world. It just kind of seemed kind of mediocre to me. Like, it wasn't bad by any means. It didn't really grab me. It was just, like, a decent comic. So, you know, I'd give it probably a 7 out of 10. I really liked the art. Like, I really, really liked the art. I thought it was nice and subtle. It wasn't, like, too in your face, but it wasn't very dreary either. The story, I mean, there wasn't – this is just the setup So my question to you is this the first time we've seen this character, or have we seen her before?
She has showed up in, like, one or two guest appearances. She showed up in an issue of Supergirl, and she also showed up in a the new Terror Titans series, just once, like, in one panel. So I think what this is doing is it's a setup, and eventually she's going to be brought into the Teen Titans, which, I mean, her character, like, the previous Terrors were Teen Titans, and yeah, you were actually pretty close with the history for not being a DC guy. The original Terra was Geoforce's little sister.
Right.
She was insane, though. She had these Earth-based powers like Geoforce and like the current Terra. But she was an undercover agent of Deathstroke sent to infiltrate the Titans, learn their identities and all this. And this was a big story back in the Wolfman Perez era. And what happened was she kind of went insane and ended up kind of having a big meltdown, which the result was her dying. And then there was a second Terra that was kind of from an alternate reality, I think, and that's gone away. And the big revelation at the end of the issue is she's a genetic match for those previous Terras. So we don't know, we know she has some connection to it. And really, like, I'm sorry there wasn't anything better to pick that week, because or 2 weeks ago now was kind of a light week.
Mm-hmm. What about the stuff with Dr. Midnight in this? It seemed kind of odd and out of place, because Power Girl takes Terra and he samples her blood, and Power Girl's like, wait, what are you doing? And he's like, well, you never know if we need this blood, and this is something that I should do. It seemed really weird. Is that, like, do you think that's going to be like a plot device, or was that just a kind of a throwaway scene?
I think that's just something so they can, like, explain that she has some connection to the previous Terras.
Okay.
Granted, like, I don't think that's how a practicing doctor should probably behave. Right. But, I think that's more or less just a plot device. Like, oh, we took her blood, and of course, she's a genetic match. It was weird. It was just a very average, good, you know, it's just fun adventure comic. Yeah. But there was nothing real substantial to it. I'd probably give it like a 6. It was very middle of the road.
So, you being the DC and the Titan guy, do you have, what's your thought when you think of Terra? I mean, is that a character that you would like to have back, or?
I'm glad that if they're going to do it, it's going to be a legacy and not like bring back from the dead the original one or anything like that. Cause I've had it with characters coming back from the dead. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's always been a good idea, like, that character with that type of powers, and it's fun. But along with this character, instead of just inventing a new character, you're taking a character who's going to, just by the name alone, is going to have a lot of baggage. And so it'll be interesting to see, like, she's already interacted with Power Girl, which is kind of interesting, but to see her inclusion, like, how is Geoforce going to react to this? How are the Titans going to react to this? It'll be interesting, and God knows the Teen Titans need some new blood on that team. So,
yeah.
That'll be exciting when she's brought into that team. On the other side, let's go to a very average book to talk about a book from the past couple weeks that was very big, Ultimatum, uh-huh. #1. I'm of two minds to judge this. I almost don't want to judge it yet. I had a fun time reading this book.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be really disappointed if they made a really big, no pun intended, a really big splash in the big book, like in the first issue. And I'm going to be really disappointed if they go back in the next issue and say, no, all these people that we killed off in the first issue are actually okay.
See, because now, okay.
That was what got me. I was like, oh, Jesus, they have a big body count.
Yeah, seemingly they killed off some of the X-Men, like Nightcrawler, Angel, maybe, or I guess Angel and Dazzler got away.
Beast.
Excuse me. It looks like Johnny is dead.
Yeah, and see, I was like, that's great. Kill a 1-4.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing is that they've promised that things post Ultimatum and Ultimate Universe things are going to be drastically different. And if this rings true, this first issue, that's going to be true. Having said that, I really did not like Ultimatum #1.
Why didn't you like it?
I feel like Jeff Loeb is just so hit or miss lately. I'm going to be honest. Like, Jeff Loeb used to be one of my favorite writers, but now if I see his name on something, it's not that I'm not going to buy it, but I'm kind of like, I don't know what I'm in for. And so he had the Ultimate Captain America and Black Panther annual that came out, and it was really good. Like, really good, very deep, very well written. And I just seemed like when he was going the ultimatum, this just kind of seemed kind of... It just seemed kind of empty. Like, it did seem big. It did seem big to me, but it just kind of seemed like maybe a little bit too much shock value. There doesn't seem to be, like, a lot of depth to the story. And granted, this is only the first issue, but I don't know. The other thing is that I was really disappointed with Finch's art. It seemed like it was rushed for whatever reason. And then I guess we just found out that the ultimatum now has been delayed. I think the next issue was supposed to come out in December, and now it's coming out in February. And I've loved Finch's art from New Avengers and like stuff he's done in Fallen Sun, but it just seemed... Maybe it was the fact that he was trying to draw the characters different because he's never done anything in the Ultimate Universe before, but it was just kind of... It wasn't the normal Finch that I've come to know and love.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's fair. I'm not, like, really attached to him or anything. I thought there was some pretty spectacular panels. You know, I had to find out why Magneto would want to do that, but at the same time, right. It's like, okay, I understand, but, you know, I was intrigued enough, but like I said, I just thought it took a lot of gravitas to kill off a lot of those main characters, and sure, if they did it, that's going to be great. I think that's, like, so brave of even Marvel just to do it in the Ultimate Universe, because then they have to tell those stories. Like, there's got to be an eventual aftermath, and what's going to happen? Like, Fantastic Three, or do you bring someone else in, or something like that? Like, you know, but if they come back in the next issue and Johnny's like, I'm okay, and all the X-Men come back and we're okay, and like, even Xavier said it, like, some of them died, so, like, I want, if it's really going to have that impact, that shake-up feeling, like, I want there to be a body count. I want this to mean something, so...
Yeah.
We'll really see next issue. I'd give it, like, an 8.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give it probably, like, a 7. I guess we'd have to see where it goes. I think this is something that the Ultimate Universe does need, and maybe that's why I'm more critical, because I read so much of the Ultimate Universe. But, yeah, the Ultimate Universe isn't that different, you know, than the Marvel Universe. It's become very convoluted with the continuity, and the continuity of the Ultimate Universe isn't really all that different from the regular Marvel Universe. So they really do need to shake it up. And, you know, if they're going to kill some major characters and kind of reorganize things, it's probably a good idea right now.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to Kingdom Come Special Superman number 1.
Okay. So what did you think of this?
You know, I thought it was good. I looked at it at first and I was like, okay, Alex Ross, he's kind of started to leave a bitter taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
And so going into that, but on the other hand, I love Kingdom Come. And I've always loved it as a single body of work, much like Dark Knight Returns, because as much as I love Dark Knight Returns, I'm always going to have a little bit of bitter aftertaste of The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate part about that is, you know, a little bit of that is always going to be in the back of my mind whenever I read Dark Knight Returns. And I want that so much to be a standalone work now. And now Kingdom Come is, and we've got all this potential for it to kind of go and have a sequel that leaves a bitter taste. And so far it's been okay, so I was very hesitant. But I really liked, there was a lot of moments in this that I really enjoyed. And while we do get, like, the younger, bit more jovial Superman in the Action Comics and Superman titles, I think it's, and that's perfectly fine. That's how I want him in those books. I think it's good to have this older Superman that can be a little bit more of the brawny, weight of the world on my shoulders type of archetype character. Because I don't want the regular Superman to be like that all the time. That would get boring.
Right.
But to have him in here, it's a nice contrast, and I really enjoyed the conversation between him and Cyclone, who she's young and she just wants to help and and talk him through his problems. And then when he goes and tries to talk to Lois and everything like that, the only thing that I thought was cliched is the two Supermen fighting.
Right.
For however briefly it was really quick. But I'm just like, I am so done with like alternate Supermen coming together and fight. Mm-hmm. I'm so sick of that. Other than that, I enjoyed this issue quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I am a little bit torn on whether this was needed and whether this should have cost $3.99, but yep. I thought it was pretty cool. I like that it was more, I'm not sure how to say it. It was more of the exploration of the character of Superman, not just of the title. Like, this is, basically, you can sum it up with how it ends. Like, it ends with, you know, him saying Clark Kent died the day that his Lois died, and he's not coming back. And I thought that was a really cool idea, because that's something I've never really thought about. Because they go really into depth about the stuff with the Joker, but you see it all from his point of view. Because that stuff was all kind of alluded to in Kingdom Come, but this kind of gives a lot more depth to that background story. And the things that he's felt, and I thought, I was like, okay, this is okay. I was right there with you when the two Superman fighting, because it served no purpose at all except for to have the Kingdom Come Superman, you know, check his feelings and to get a grasp of what he was doing. But when you get down to the end of the story and he's talking to Lois, and you know he's telling the story about what happened to her, and It's hard to watch, especially with the fact that, like, she has the, her skull's been bashed in, and he can see it with his x-ray vision, and he's just, all he can do is hold her, and he can't do anything for her. And I don't know, it was just, I didn't expect that to grab me as much as it did, because going through the first part of the story, it was like, okay, this is just a special, this is a one-shot, this is what I expect, and then at the end, it kind of hits you with something pretty powerful, and I'm like, wow. Okay, maybe this was worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I dug it.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, $3.99 seems to be a fairly common price now on comics. So it's just
true.
Like,
true.
I'm starting to just kind of cringe and bear it at this point, or be a little bit more selective with what I buy lately.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was good. It wasn't like earth shattering again, but it was enjoyable. It was a good read. And I'm definitely enjoying that part of the Justice Society story more than the Earth 2 stuff that's going on. So,
which I have to call out. What's up with them saying that the Earth 2 Superman isn't dead now? That then they try to... What did Geoff Johns say? That like he's somewhere else now? Did you catch that in JSA 20?
I think they're just like...
Because at first I thought it was really cool, because they're like, Kara had to basically tell them, like, your Superman is dead, and it was interesting to see how they would have to react, but then they kind of said, oh, he's not dead, he's just somewhere else.
Well, the thing is, he's dead. Like, they're not going to bring back that after the big Death and Infinite Crisis, but, like, the whole thing of, I mean, technically all those characters in Earth 2 should be dead. They've been dead before. It's just like where they're at now. They keep mentioning the red skies and Superman disappeared. So the red skies were the sign of the crisis. And so if they leave off, if their timeline is like right at where the original crisis happened, then that Superman disappeared and he went into the time stream and he went to that paradise that Alexander Luther created. I mean, then you start getting into just weird comic timelines. Like, the original Superman of the original Earth 2 is dead.
Right.
So don't worry about that.
Okay.
And this is the headache of the multiverse. This is
I don't understand what's going on, but...
And this is exactly why I didn't want the multiverse coming back.
Right. How about Wolverine number 69, Old Man Logan Continues?
This is good. This is really good.
This is good.
Yeah, Steve McNiven's art is just absolutely gorgeous. And there was a lot of, like, fun moments to this. Although, okay, Electroville is supposed to be where? Like, somewhere in the Midwest, and yet that's where the Baxter Building was.
Yeah, that was. I thought
the Baxter Building was in New York, isn't it?
The Baxter Building should be in New York. Yeah. So I don't know if they were saying like the fight was so big that it got, because basically you find out that the Baxter Building landed on Loki and killed him in some kind of big battle. And I don't know. It should be in New York, though.
Electroville's in the Midwest, so that doesn't make sense. But also, Los Angeles and San Diego are nowhere near where they're actually at either, so that map could be wrong. But
that's true.
It's a lot of fun. Like, I love the spider buggy just going up the wall. Mm-hmm. I love the bar scene where, you know, they're having a quiet drink, and then the guy comes up and taunts him, and Logan just with the fist, you know, just say something, make a joke, and he's so ready to pop those claws, and it's going to be such, like, satisfaction, I think, when it happens. But yeah, at the same time, this is also, like, a Wolverine that I've never seen before, and I'll admit, like, Wolverine has never really tickled my fancy. He's kind of, like, the epitome of everything that I started really not to like in comics in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see kind of a pacifist Wolverine, I think, is infinitely more interesting. And so I'm a lot more interested in this storyline. I think it's great, and I can't wait to... It's unfortunate that there's been a space between the issues, because I really can't wait for the next one, because they read so quickly.
Right. Yeah, this one was a little bit... this was a quicker read than the other issues. This was kind of a filler. But it's, like you said, it's interesting to watch him, because basically, after having to save Hawkeye, you see that Logan is now kind of, while he doesn't want to fight, he's getting more into it. And now he's at the point where he's just about to break. Like, we're not sure what's going on. If he has this killer instinct and it's coming back, or if he's trying to suppress it. But basically what's happens at the end is that Hawkeye kind of calls him out, and he's like, you know, what happened to you? And Wolverine finally says, well, if you want to know, I'll tell you. So it looks like this next issue, we're going to find out everything that happened. And, yeah, this is, I don't know, this is so good. It's unlike any Wolverine story I've ever read, and it's honestly unlike any Wolverine story that I ever thought I would read. So yeah. I would give it an 8 out of 10. I would dock it a little bit just because this didn't have as much as normal, but I'm really looking forward to the next issue.
Yeah, I agree, 8 out of 10. Something that's it's so good, and yet it's a knife in my heart too, is Nightwing 150. Tomasi's still writing. We had a beautiful cover by Philip Tan, and this book is so good. Like, it's the conclusion chapter to the Great Leap storyline, which is Nightwing versus Harvey Dent. And we get a nice little cameo with Barbara Gordon in here, and it's so nice to see Dick and Barbara interact. And there's a little bit of foreshadowing in here too. And they're still throwing you off. Like, what's going to happen with Batman with his absence? And, Barbara makes a mention that Dick might be going, you know, a little bit towards, like Bruce's side, like becoming a little bit more aggressive in the way he handles things. And the sound in his voice, the kind of gravelly thing like that, she's like, you sound a lot like Bruce. And so would Nightwing be taking the cape and cowl? Who knows? Mm-hmm. But what I love about this book, and it's not just this issue, but it's been ever since Tomasi came back, is what you've always said is Nightwing should be a force to be reckoned with in the DCU.
Right.
Because he's an established character. He's one of the oldest comic book characters out there. And in this book, he is. Like, he is just as capable as Batman. He's not a sidekick. He's not a lesser of, you know, a Batman light. He's an equal. And so it's like reading about a bit more lighthearted Batman. And I love putting him against Harvey Dent because they have this history. And in here they talk about it. They get into the big knockdown brawl, basically. And they start mentioning it. And I love that there's this bit in Dick Grayson that's always going to be haunted by what happened to him as Robin, and that Harvey Dent will always be linked to Dick Grayson that way. And Harvey knows, like, Harvey looks at him, he's like, I know you were that Robin that I beat the shit out of. And so the showdown was very, very worthwhile, and it was well done. Don Kramer on pencils, he's kind of drawing in the same style as Regs Morales, who started the run. But it still looks great. It looks fantastic. And I'm just loving this book so much. And the fact that it's going to be going away soon, we'll talk about later, but it's just like, I can't help reading this and just holding this issue and being like, God, this is a great comic book, and it's not going to be around much longer. Like, it's not long for this world. Oh! Sucks. But, 8 out of 10.
Alright. Last book I just wanted to mention real quick is Green Lantern Corps, number 30. Just like, as you mentioned, Mr. Tomasi, he's still doing some magical things with this book. This book is really, really good. The greatest part about this book is that we got, this is, there was, you know, Guy Gardner in this book, and there was Kyle Rayner, and there was Ion, but the core of this book and most of the stuff going on had to do with the Star Sapphires meeting up with the Guardians. And I have to tell you, like, I was just, like, hanging off of every single word in this conversation. I was just so compelled by what was going on. The Guardians basically decide to go to the Star Sapphires and say, hey, we've noticed that, you know, you're really increasing your power, that you have these rings, that you have a core. You need to kind of shut it down. And getting there, the Star Sapphires put all of this stuff out there, not only the stuff that they say, but the stuff that is physically shown to them. Like, they have these hands that are covering captured Sinestro core rings, and they're basically sucking all the power out. And it's just a message to the Guardians saying, look what we're doing, look what we can do. And then you find out that they've captured certain members of the Sinestro core, and they're basically trying to rehabilitate them.
Yes.
And turn them into Star Sapphires themselves. And it's very eerie, and it's all these different emotions with fear and will. The one of love is so interesting because of their take on it. Because love is this beautiful thing, but it can also be like this sick obsession. And that's kind of what these Star Sapphires are representing. And I don't know. Like, I was just so, like I said, I was hanging on the words of the Guardian, and they're kind of going back and forth, and at first it starts off very passive-aggressive, then it just comes to a head. And at one point, one of the Guardians pulls Sodomya to the side, and he's like, you know, if something happens here, your duty is just to tap into the Ion power as much as you can, and just take out as much of this planet as possible. And I kind of got chills just to see, like, how big the stakes are. I loved it. I mean, this is a 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah. The Crib character was creepy as hell, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, the monster that comes in the middle of the night and steals the children and has the cage on its back. And it's just like, oh, God. It kind of looks like, you know, it has the long stringy black hair like the little girl from The Ring, and I'm just like, oh God, you know, oh, it's just. But also, yeah, I was gonna mention what you were saying, where they have the people suspended and the ex Sinestro Corps members suspended, and they're like trying to rehabilitate them with love. And at one, you know, on one hand they make some good arguments, and mm-hmm. but on the other hand, are they like the ex girlfriends who just won't let go and are a little bit crazy? So it's, you know, and then, you know, it's like any buildup of any military power, you know, across the pond, and then you start looking at and like, well, are, you know, one group has to kind of go and investigate. And I mean, there's a lot of parallels. I mean, despite whatever your leanings are, I mean, it's a lot like any kind of international dispute. Right. And so it was really interesting to watch, and it was kind of fun to have Guy Gardner in there just to break the tension a little bit.
It's really bad if Guy Gardner is the voice of reason.
Yeah, but you just needed that, because it was a really, like, when the Guardians and the Zamorians are talking, it's just like, oh this is awkward, this uh-huh. is uncomfortable.
It should be interesting to see, because it's, you know, green is, you know, good. And yellow and red are obviously bad. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But the Star Sapphires and love as their emotion, they really fall into this gray area. So when the Blackest Night hits, I mean, I don't know, like, which side they're going to be on. Because they they hate the Guardians. You know, they're very upfront about that. Yeah. But
you're also... Green, you say green is good. Green's not necessarily good. No, green's just...
Well, but if we're looking on the sides of the spectrum, you know it's going to be green against the Red Lanterns. You know it's going, obviously, for the most part, it's going to be green against the Yellow Lanterns. We know so far that the Blue Lanterns are probably going to side with the Green Lanterns, but where are the Purple Lanterns going to play in?
Well, I want to know, is there going to be like a paradigm shift in the way the Guardians run things at the end of Blackest Night? Because...
Oh, and the new law that they announced at the end of this.
Yeah. Which is another big...
They announced that Green Lanterns cannot be in relationships with other Green Lanterns. That ruins their... Which is... This is going back to the old school Guardians. That's where this is... This feels like. You know, this is... Which makes me think, like... Because I so liked The Last Will and Testament, and I loved when Kyle had the Ion Power and he remade the Guardians, and the whole point was that... Okay, you guys can't do things like you did the last time. Like, you have to learn from your lessons. And they're going exactly back, even worse than where they were.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up that exact thing. Was at the end of that story, when Kyle brought them back, he said, you know, he's like, you know, that's... It's one thing to be an immortal and to kind of forget your way, but, you know, for your core members, they're living people, and these things you put up are just too rigid for the living. You have to allow them to flex, and you have to find a new path and things like that, which is interesting because he told Ganthet that Ganthet is the only one who was in a relationship with another Guardian. They got expelled.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the rest of the Guardians have gone right back to the way they were before. So I'm kind of on one hand disappointed to see that, but at the other hand, like, there's going to be repercussions. Like, they're not going to get out of that scot-free. So,
right.
Yeah, it is interesting to see them go right back to that. Last book I want to talk about is Batman Cacophony by Kevin Smith and Walt Flanagan.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Uh-oh.
It was weird. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this isn't Kevin Smith's run on Green Arrow. I never read his... I read the first issue of Spider-Man Black Cat, but... and didn't read Daredevil, but it's not as ground shaking as the Green Arrow thing. Granted, it's only the first issue, but there was a nice scene with Deadshot in here, and I always liked the Deadshot character, and it was really well written. The story was good. There's just a problem I have where, you know, Smith's movies, and I'm a fan, like I always have been, and they exist in their own universe, and that's fine, but I know he's capable of doing stuff without the potty humor. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of his trademark. But it's like he felt the need to, because he had the Joker to write, that he felt the need, like, the Joker can get away with a lot of sex humor jokes and stuff like that. And it's just like, as soon as he started doing that, I started rolling my eyes. I'm like, okay, that's Kevin Smith. Like, it just took me right out of it, and it seemed a little odd. Like, there's a scene in the woods where the Joker kind of propositions himself, and... just seems really, really odd. And so I'm not saying it's completely out of character or anything like that. It's just like, it's something that smacked of Kevin Smith. And I'm just like, okay, well, you know, that could have been, you know, Jay is what it sounded like. It sounded like, you know, something like that. So actually the scene between in the woods where the Joker propositions himself is with the Joker and with a silent character. So you have one that talks too much and one that doesn't talk at all. So it's basically Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh, jeez. So what's this overall, what's the story supposed to be about? What is he
trying to do? Well, the story so far is we have Deadshot show up at Arkham Asylum on a contract to kill the Joker. And so there's a fight out. I don't know if you remember the Green Lantern, or the Green Arrow run. There was a villain that he created that he made the sound of whatever was around him. And he put Connor Hawk in the hospital.
No, I don't remember that.
And that was... Okay. Basically, that character comes back in, saves the Joker from Deadshot, break him out of Arkham, and basically gives him a lot of capital to go out into the world and wreak havoc. And basically, we find out that Maxi Zeus, an old Batman villain from the 90s, has taken Joker laughing... the poison gas and diluted it and made it into kind of a laughing gas ecstasy drug for kids, and he's selling it as a drug to like clubbers and things like that. And the Joker finds out that this is just totally unacceptable because his drug should be killing people and nothing less. So it kind of turns into a little bit of a gang war at the end of it. And there's very little Batman in this. So it's interesting. Like,
that actually sounds a lot like his Spider-Man Black Cat story, to be honest.
It could be. I didn't.
Yeah, because that whole story was about this guy who would teleport drugs into people to have them overdose, and it had a lot to do with drugs and gangs. So that's weird.
We'll see what the parallels are. I'll read the next issue, but at the same time, it's like it's a $3.99 cover price, and it's like.
And there's only three, though, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, they're supposed to all be coming out on time and everything like that. So we'll see how it goes. It was just kind of a rough start, I'd say. I'd probably give it like a 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Fair enough.
Okay. So with that, you let me borrow a few trades. And what we're going to talk about this week is The Walking Dead Volume 1.
Uh-huh.
This book gave me a nightmare.
Yeah, this is the book that everyone talked about, Robert Kirkman from Image. Everyone said, you have to read Walking Dead, you have to read it. And I was like, no, no, no. And on a whim, I was like, okay, I'll try it. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really good. I'm like, Eric, I really like this, but I think that you'll love this. So I'm excited to see what you thought.
It was really good. I really liked it. It's also a quick read, so I was able to like just pick it up in one afternoon and read the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always a fan. I like scary stories, and I'm always a fan of that genre of like people on the run. Like, right. there's only a few of them. There's something out there in the dark, and it's gonna get you. Like, and you know, something that it's almost unavoidable. Like, you're never gonna really stop it. And with this, you know, the whole world has gone to hell. Basically, everyone's a zombie except a few stragglers here and there. And, you know, this grouping of people find each other. They camp outside of Atlanta, and occasionally they have to run into the city to get supplies and come back out. And I always thought that was really interesting, like, you know, that whole dynamic of having to sneak in and then get out before, you know, these zombies get you. And I like they're not the sprinting zombies from 28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of interesting things, like how they came up with the idea of rubbing the... As gross as it was, rubbing the dead people's blood on them so the other zombies think that they're zombies. And then when it starts to rain and it washes off, and like, you know, reading the book, and I'm like, oh, no, go. And I'm like, get out. But there's just a lot of good moments. And then like when a couple of the people in the camp become infected, and there's one guy who lost his family and he gets bitten. And as soon as he gets bitten, you're like, oh, no. And he gets sick, and he doesn't transform for a couple of weeks, and he's on his kind of on his last leg, and he just has to be kind of put out, you know, back in the city, and he's like, this is how it's going to be, just leave me here, and maybe I'll find what's left of my family out there, because they're all transformed. So that was interesting, but then there's two young girls in the group, too, and when one of them gets bitten, you know, she's done for when the zombies find their camp, basically, and how the other one has to kind of take care of her so she doesn't become a zombie. I thought it was really interesting. And also when you're in a group like that, I thought Kirkman did a really good job of like showing that not everyone's going to really get along. They're not going to see everything eye to eye, even if it is a survival situation. And actually things are going to probably break down quicker than you expect, which they do. So I was actually a little shocked by the ending. It was really good. So I'm on board. I will most likely be picking up the next couple of trades and reading those.
Yeah.
You know, after the other set that I have.
The great thing about Walking Dead is you kind of nailed it. Is that it's not so much. I mean, zombies are in it, and zombies are in it a lot. But it's not about the zombies. It's about the survivors, and it's almost about the fact that at certain points, and you'll see that as you keep on reading, that the people that they're with can be worse than the zombies. It's one of those things where, which I've always kind of said, is that I don't get really scared by things like zombies or whatever, but if you show me like humanity at its worst, that freaks me out. And that's what you're seeing. Like, you see people in these desperate situations, and then they do some kind of crazy and desperate things. And it's just eerie. Like, that's kind of the only way to put it. It's just... like some of the stuff is just hard to watch, but then the characterization and the relationships and everything is just so well done that you just can't tear yourself away. Like you said, like they're quick reads, but there's a lot of content. There's a lot of words, but it just goes like that because you're so involved in it.
Yeah. And I think also the black and white scheme of the book, the look of the book, kind of adds a little bit. Like, I don't think it would be as creepy if it was colored.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But there's kind of this dull, grayish tone to everything. Like, you almost feel a little bit like the people in the group, like a little hopeless for him, yep, or something like that. Like, things aren't bright and cheery. And so exactly that really right. adds a tone, a feel to the book. It was really good. I was impressed, and it actually gave me a nightmare. I was like, oh, damn, Walking Dead. I never get nightmares.
Wait, what was this nightmare? What happened?
And the zombies. The zombies were coming. I just remember, I woke up and I was like, I had a dream about zombies. And it was like a few days after reading that book. I was like, damn it. You gotta be kidding me. But no, I mean, it was just creepy. And it's just, being confronted with a realistic take on humanity in an unrealistic situation is always kind of an interesting thing to see.
Right.
So it's not like, it's not Independence Day where you have humanity acting, you know, goofy and, you know, all banding together. It's like, you know, in the face of an alien invasion, which, you know, if something like that happened, odds are humanity would just collapse in on itself. But, right, you know, something like this where, yeah, you have people, you still have these personality conflicts and, you know, things like the way people behave personally or socially or their religion or things like that are still, like, some asshole in the group is still going to bring that up and have it become a problem for everybody.
Well, I'm glad you liked
it. I thought that was interesting.
Okay, so on to a little bit of comic news. Now, there's a couple of things that we need to talk about going over at DC. But the first one is that they just announced that after Batman RIP in February, Nightwing, Robin, and Birds of Prey are going to be canceled.
And Eric died inside.
And somewhere I heard Eric say, no!
Oh, I was heartbroken when I read this. Now, let me say a few things about this.
Mm-hmm.
Birds of Prey is a good book from what I've read. I'm not heavily involved with it, but it's Barbara Gordon's book. I understand that, and I like that it's there. I think it's a great book. It has a lot of strong female characters in it where they're not all TNA-based. You know, they're smart, they're brainy. I think it's a very, very well-done book.
Mm-hmm.
Robin is a book that I have from the first issue. I have the foil cover. I have two copies, like the newsstand edition and the foil edition. It's my book for all intents and purposes. Like, that was the thing, is like, you know, when I was a kid and reading Robin, like, that was the character I most identified with and came back to, and it's waxed and waned over the years, but it ever since 1 year later, it came back with a vengeance, and I've loved it. It just kills me. Nightwing is the book that brought me back into comics, because I always liked the Nightwing character, and when I was younger, he was kind of like a big brother type of person. And then when I came back into comics, I was in college and could relate much more to his situation, being close to his age at that point. And so I bought all the trades. I've been reading issues for a while, and so I love both of these books. They're my two favorite heroes, and to see these books canceled after such stellar runs and also long runs. I mean, there's not a whole lot of books out there that have that high numbering anymore. And here's the thing: is what I think DC might be doing. I think they will be back in one form or another.
Oh yeah, they'll definitely be back.
But the thing is, maybe not Birds of Prey, but like the thing, Robin and Nightwing are both, I mean, decent sales in comparison to other DC books. I mean, they pull their weight.
Uh-huh.
So I think what DC's doing is, they did this when Superman died in the 90s, is they canceled all the Superman books.
Right.
And for a few months, there was no Superman books. And what that did was that
really
made you feel like you're living in a world without Superman.
We're getting a miniseries called Battle for the Cow, which is going to apparently be written by Tony Daniels.
I think
he's writing it too. Yeah, I think he's actually writing it. Because the rumor was that it was going to be Judd Winnick, but I think it's actually Tony Daniels is going to be also writing it. Which I think is a little bit weird to give him... This is kind of a big deal, but if they have faith in his ability, then that's, you know, that's all
for it. I know Neil Gaiman is writing a 2-issue, like, retrospective called Whatever Happened to Caped Crusader, which I think I'm just going to cry throughout that whole thing, because they did a whole thing in the 80s, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, right before the crisis, and, Alan Moore wrote it, and it was like the final goodbye to the Silver Age Superman. And if Neil Gaiman's Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader is the final goodbye to the modern Batman, I am gonna.
Here's the thing: is that what are the chances that this is Bruce Wayne's final farewell? It's not gonna happen.
Well, the thing is, we know Bruce Wayne is in Final Crisis, and Final Crisis is supposed to be, like, the final, like, say on, like, where and what happens to Bruce Wayne as Batman. But at the same time, I think that there is going to be a shakeup, and the modern Batman that we know and love, it might not be that comes back. I think Batman will exist in some form or another for a while. You know, he'll be back.
I think Bruce is going to be gone for a while, but he'll be back.
Right, but at the same time, like, it might be a different take on Bruce, or there might be a reboot. I mean, we have a crisis happening, too, and God knows, like, continuity loves to be played with in these things, so...
Right.
You know, if it is, and if it is the final door on everything, it's really gonna hit me hard. Now, what might happen is in a couple months, they might bring those books back with new numbering or something like that. Which is also going to piss me off, because, like, why renumber it? We saw this happen with The Flash, right. And it's just like, why would we just go back to the old numbering? If they bring it back with the old numbering, all good and fine, everything's forgiven. But at the same time, it's like, I'm still having to prepare myself, because, like, I don't want to live in a world without Batman comics. And, you know, for a couple months, I'm going to have to. And so it's like, I'm preparing to say goodbye at this point. I'm really sad about this whole thing now.
Okay. I know it's gonna be hard, but it's gonna be okay. I am not reading Amazing Spider-Man, and it was rough, but I'm still doing all right. It's just a transition period, Eric. Just breathe. Just breathe.
I don't know. Like, this is the thing. It's like, this is my anchor in the comics world, and, like, there's a lot of series out there that are good and they're bad and they come and go, and I can drop and pick up again. I can't do that with these characters. These are my go-to characters. It's killing me. So, I know I'm, like, overly freaking out like every comic fan, but at the same time, it's like, I know it's going to be okay. Batman will be back. I'm excited for the new direction, but at the same time, it's just like, there's a lot of potential for it to go off the rails.
Right. Okay, now, another rumor. Now, this isn't even, I don't think this is even confirmed. Well, the other news was confirmed. A rumor is that Final Crisis is also going to be further delayed because Dan DiDio did not like Grant Morrison's ending for the book, and they are rewriting the ending.
Apparently, I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm kind of sick of Dan DiDio doing this.
Yeah, I guess the whole thing was that he said that Grant Morrison's original idea was maybe a little bit too bleak. And again, this is all just a rumor. And so they're doing some rewrites, which is obviously not going to make Grant Morrison very happy. My only question is that, yeah, maybe DiDio didn't know the full story of Final Crisis, but he had to know the beginning and the end going into it, right? I mean, he's not going to just... Like, I know that Grant Morrison's a very high-profile writer, and maybe right now the most important person at DC other than Geoff Johns, because he sells books. But I can't see them just saying, okay, you're writing the biggest story that's going on in DC right now, and we don't need to hear the ending. I mean, that can't have happened.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is, like, Grant originally had a really kind of bare synopsis of what happens at the end, and maybe, like, you know, too many characters maybe too many characters got killed off, and Dan wants to step in, which, to be fair, that's kind of Dan's job.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
You know, to do that, but at the same time, it's like, what I worry about is, you know, if Grant has this big epic story in mind, and he has a certain way he wanted it to go, what I fear is if he's forced to change that, then it's going to force a different ending that's maybe a watered-down ending and might not be as good, because it sounds like he had an ending that was going to have serious repercussions for the DCU and really going to change the landscape. You know, maybe that's going to change, maybe it won't. You know, it's still so early to tell. Like, we're just at the cusp of the turning point in Final Crisis now, to where, you know, the bad stuff's happened. We need to start getting the turnaround into the third act at this point. Mm-hmm. So I really, really hope it's not delayed, because this event's gone on long enough. Like, it started last summer. I need some closure on this. So yeah, we'll see.
It's kind of weird that
I worry about a watered down ending, if that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we'll see. I think it's an interesting, I don't know. I guess the PR is not great at DC right now. Just like stuff like this coming out, and just like the perception, and just, it just feels like things there are just not really under control. And
it's kind of a joke. Like, they've even joked about it in the Ambush Bug miniseries, is like how kind of unwieldy the management has become. At DC, like, something needs to happen to streamline that, or make it a little bit more cohesive, I guess.
And another thing is, like I said, like, you have someone like Grant Morrison, you know, who's doing two of the biggest events right now, Final Crisis and, you know, RIP. You really need to you know, let this guy be happy. You don't want to do anything that's going, because, you know, I don't like Grant Morrison's books, but, you know, I can, you know, admit that, like, he sells books. You know, if his name's on a book, it's going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of mess with that is a little bit iffy.
But I guess,
it is DiDio's decision. But the last time he had a decision to make with a Crisis book, he wanted to kill Dick Grayson, so.
And then the hordes rose up against him. So we saved Dick Grayson.
Yes, that's true. But now his book got canceled. Did you hear about that?
I'm sorry.
That was a low blow. I am sorry. That was too hard.
Kicking the nards. Okay. Well, David's physically and verbally abusing me. That wraps it up for this week. You can find us on the comic forums, which we have a link to at our webpage, www.fanboystrikeback.blogspot.com. We post various articles occasionally there. You can download the podcast from that point. And like I said, we do have a link to our forums where we have several topics posted up, and we like to discuss those with all you guys out there. And so it's great to see you on there. If you have any questions, you can always email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com. We love to get your questions and read them on the show and get back to you on those. You can also find us on iTunes.
Yep, iTunes, Podcast Alley, most podcatchers out there. If you do like the show, please leave us a review. It really helps us out, helps other people see the show. If you like it, tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell anyone who you think would like comics. Because, I mean, honestly, who wouldn't want to hear us talk about comics?
We really appreciate everyone who's left a review so far, and we really would like to push some more positive reviews for the show. So please, if you haven't left a review and you like the show, please hop on. It really helps us out.
Yep, it really does. Can't even emphasize how much. Also, you can give us a call at our voicemail, 206-350-2354. Give us a call, leave a message, question or a comment, and we'll play it on the show. And we are also sponsored by InStock Trades. You can go to InStockTrades.com. They have some ridiculous discounts on trades. Eric, you might want to pick up those Walking Dead trades there. That's where I got mine. And it can be a little bit can be a little bit of a bad thing, to be honest, because we have an addiction. Let's just be real, and it's kind of hard to not justify spending a little bit amount of money on some trades. So just be careful when you buy.
I'll tell you what, there's that Luke Skywalker hardback comic that came out, and I'm eyeballing that thing like a hawk.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
That's a given Dark, for you.
Dark Empire in absolute format? Oh, that's how you sell a book to Eric, I'll tell you what.
Okay, well, I think that does it for this week, so we'll see you guys next week.
Later.